their dog Karma was beside the potty, happily licking his lips after having enjoyed a surprise treat. Before we dive in, a warning. The content of this podcast may not be appropriate for some young listeners. This is real life, and that means that sometimes it can be a little bit graphic. So listen on at your own peril. As a veterinarian, dog behaviorist, best-selling author, and trainer, over the past decade, I've had an obsession with transforming the behavior of dogs. Understanding their brains and creating practical strategies that you can implement easily at home. I know all too well when the dream you imagined when you first got your dog is far from your daily reality. In fact, out of the blue, a few months ago, my little dog Gorse was bitten by a dog 20 times her size. And suddenly our life of stress-free walks, a calm and cuddly household, and being teammates was replaced with reactivity, anxiety, and worrying about what's around the next corner. I'm Dr. Tom, this is the Help My Dog podcast, and this is me documenting that journey of transformation, sharing my knowledge and experience with you and having a few laughs along the way. Hello HMD family and welcome to a hormone special. So this has been really, really requested to talk about hormones. And so what I thought would be good is if we tackle the male and the female separately so that we can dive into each of them because they have different considerations. And it's an area that I'm really passionate about. And to give some background on this, about now 7-8 years ago, I did a video, okay? I'd been seeing loads of behavior cases. That day I was in the behavior clinic, and every case that I saw that day involved a dog being worried about the world, whether they were reactive to other dogs or people, or maybe they had separation anxiety. And the owners had been advised to castrate their dog. Okay, so these were all male dogs. They've been advised to neuter their male dogs. In other words, chop them off. Now, what then happened is that the behavior struggles got worse. And the thing is, this day, it was one after another of behavior consults where neutering of a male dog had made their reactivity worse, their separation struggles worse, their general anxiety worse. And that was just one day, and I was seeing it over and over again where it was like castration was deemed the cure-all for, behavior struggles. And I did a video, and I put it on my Facebook page, and I don't think it's there anymore, but I put it on my Facebook page, and I went back to my behavior consults that afternoon, and I think I had another 3, checking in on how a few of the dogs were doing. And I then went back on my phone, I went back on my Facebook, and this video had been shared hundreds and hundreds of times. And I was like, brilliant, the word is getting out there. And basically in this video, what I said was, this isn't the answer, this isn't a cure-all. Here's actually what is going on with testosterone. And I'll explain what is actually going on with testosterone in this podcast episode. But I was so pleased. I was like, yes, finally, hopefully we've saved a few more dogs from having this, irreversible procedure that has been, wrongly suggested to cure their behavior struggle. Because at the end of the day, if you chop them off, you can't stick them back on. There is no procedure to do that. And so I was really happy. And then I went in my messenger inbox. And it was at that point that I realized what an emotive topic this is. There were people, praising me for speaking out and saying, thank you, I've shared the video. This makes so much sense that I'm spreading the word. There were people in my inbox saying they were going to castrate me, right? They were furious that I had said this. They were saying that I was going to cause, the world to be overpopulated with dogs, and it's disgusting that a vet would speak this way. And I realized that any conversation around hormones is emotive. There were people in my inbox saying that I was a sexist pig because I was saying that male dogs shouldn't be castrated, but I didn't say anything about female dogs, right? And so I had a different approach for each. Yeah, because they have different hormones. But anyway, we'll talk about that in the next episode. And it made me realize, wow, this is a big topic. And no wonder there isn't much information out there. If, you know, people, when they speak about it, are going to be told that they're going to, you know, get castrated. Like, I mean, that is not the kind of message you want to receive ever, right? So I'm going to talk about this and I'm going to dive into it. And I'm going to talk about this from my perspective as a vet, a behaviorist, and a trainer, which I think gives me a pretty unique perspective. I think the other reason why my perspective is unique is because obviously in starting the behavior clinic 10 years ago and in seeing, you know, the team seeing over 400 cases every month now, we see dogs that have never seen a behaviorist. We see dogs that have seen 10 behaviorists. We see dogs with their bits, without their bits, and everything in between, yeah? And so, I feel like we do have a really unique perspective on approach on this, and I want to spread the word. What I'm not going to talk about is overpopulation, okay? All I'm going to say on overpopulation, because that would be a separate episode if I was like, you know, if the episode was called Tom's Opinions on How to Deal with Overpopulation in Countries Where There Are a Lot of Dogs in Rescue Centres. I can do that at some point, if you like. But what I will say is that in some countries, some Scandinavian countries in particular, neutering is deemed a mutilation. It's deemed you do not do it, right? And those countries, interestingly, have less of an overpopulation issue than countries where dogs are routinely neutered. And so for me, overpopulation is very much a consequence of perception of animals, perception, how a population perceives and treats animals generally, and how those animals are managed generally, okay? That in itself is something that that we could talk about at some point, and, you know, I do a lot of work with rescue centres and behaviour cases, and I can talk about that at some point. But what I'm talking about in this episode is going to relate to specifically testosterone and behaviour. Okay, awesome. So, got that disclaimer out of the way. Now, we're talking male dogs, and I think for a long, long time, castration has been deemed the cure-all for all kinds of behaviour struggles, reactivity, unpredictability with other dogs, general over-exuberance, yeah? And in hindsight, and I'm sure everybody would agree with this, even, you know, there's a lot of people still giving that advice out. If they're asked what evidence that is based on, they would struggle to find any evidence, yeah? And they would struggle to be able to say what their decisions are based on, other than that's just kind of what was done, right? 10 years ago, especially before I started really speaking out about this, male dogs were routinely castrated at 6 months old. And you might be listening to this and your dog was routinely castrated at 6 months old. And so before I dive into this, what I want to say is if your dog has been castrated, don't feel bad. Don't feel like, you know, you did the wrong thing. We can still get amazing behavior results if your dogs don't have their bits. That's not a problem. We can still get transformation in their reactivity, their separation anxiety, their over-exuberance, whatever else, if they don't have their bits. And in fact, testosterone isn't just produced in the testes in the male dog, and there's testosterone also in females, right? Just to prove the point. So don't feel bad. Maybe I can talk a little bit at the end about what to do if your dog has been castrated. But I'm going to talk about those to those people who are deciding if it's the right option, if they've been given this advice and they're weighing up whether it's a good option or not. Now, really important to understand in understanding this challenge is what is happening when we get rid of when we castrate a dog. Two things are happening. The testes are removed, which means that they can no longer reproduce. But also what is removed, because they exist within the testes, is the Leydig cells. And these are the testosterone-producing cells. And so the dog loses their main source of the bulk of their testosterone, that if the Leydig cells were there, they would have, you know, higher testosterone levels accordingly. Now, what does testosterone do? Well, what testosterone does is a few different things. The way that I like to think about testosterone is, broadly speaking, it increases confidence. But actually, what happens? How does testosterone increase confidence? Well, if you've been listening to this podcast for a little while, you've probably heard me talk about this thing called the amygdala, yeah? And what the amygdala is, you've probably heard me refer to it as the drama almond of the brain. It's like, there's a threat, there's danger, fight or flight. Yeah, it's a thing that's activated when your dog is reacting to other dogs, reacting to people, having a fear response to noises, freaking out because they don't want to be separated from you. The amygdala's going, right? Now, what testosterone does on the amygdala is it increases the threshold at which a dog feels anxious or worried. It increases the threshold of the anxiety and fear threshold. So in other words, it makes the amygdala a little bit more numb. Yeah, it makes the amygdala, it's a little bit harder to stimulate the amygdala, okay, because it increases that threshold at which it goes, right? And the amygdala is doing that when your dog's experiencing one of the behavior struggles that you're probably, you know, watching this for, right? Your dog's unpredictable of other dogs, reactive to other dogs, separation anxiety, whatever else it might be. And that's the route by which testosterone increases confidence. Now, testosterone does something else, and I think this is why it tends to get a bit of a bad rap, okay? And that is, and again, I like to speak in simple terms because if it's not simple, it's probably wrong. It increases the volume dial on the brain is the best way to think about it. So it makes responses maybe more active. It makes responses maybe more engaged, right? It reduces disengagement a little bit. So, you know, it makes sense, doesn't it? Testosterone, it's a hormone that's involved in finding a mate. If you're, you know, if you spot a mate over there as a dog and they're, you know, perfectly in season, and then you're like, oh, I'll head over there. And then you're like, oh, but there's a butterfly over there. I'm going to head over here. Right. Testosterone tries to stop that. It says, right, you're going to fixate. And that means that the dog kind of engages in a very big way, generally. And I say big way, not often, actually. It's not to the extreme that we are told when we're told to castrate our dogs. So it increases the volume dial on the brain. Now, this is why it gets a bit of a bad rap, right? Because actually it makes responses, you know, more. But the fact is the responses were there in the first place, yeah? So castration is never going to just stop your dog's behavior struggles. And in fact, if, you know, often dogs are responding to the world in an inappropriate way because they are worried, they are scared, they are having a fear response, they are lacking confidence. And so, yeah, you might reduce the volume dial on the brain, but you also reduce their confidence and the behavior struggle gets worse. So in summary, getting rid of testosterone is not going to, it's never going to completely resolve a behavior struggle, far from it. You might, you know, in some very specific scenarios, you might get like 5% improvement, right? But there's a big chance that it's going to make the behavior struggle worse, yeah? Because as a result of now the amygdala's more sensitive, it's reduced, it's lost that numbing effect of the testosterone, okay? So you can see castration, probably not a blanket approach and a blanket answer for dogs. Now, based on the fact that testosterone increases your dog's confidence, and if we get rid of the testosterone, their amygdala, that fight or flight drama almond in their brain, is much more likely to react. They're more likely to react to other dogs, separation anxiety, be unpredictable with other dogs, be worried about noises, be worried about the world generally. It's clear that castration is not a blanket approach to all dogs. But what do we do? Well, I think we've got a couple of options, and I know what my first option would be. My first option would be, let's work with their behavior, right? Let's give them the skill of confidence. Let's give them the skill of disengagement. Let's give them the skill of calmness, which is way more simple to do than surgery, and we're going to get a better outcome, right? So whether that's working with a behaviorist, you know, you can come and see us at Behavevet and have a, you know, a remote Zoom behavior consultation, and we'll come up with a plan for you. Whether that's getting involved in the Help My Dog family, maybe joining the Help My Dog Hub membership so that you can see all the videos and see how to work with your dog, entirely up to you. But that would be like my preferred option. The second thing to then consider is, well, if there is an option of a non-permanent thing, a non-permanent change, I would always go with it. And so obviously when we chop them off, when we castrate, when we do a surgical castration on a dog, there is no option to put them back on if we discover that actually it has indeed worsened the behavior as the, you know, the science would suggest, right? And so is there a way that we could almost like test drive it if we were absolutely certain that this is going to make it better? And this is something that you could speak to your vet about. There are implants that create exactly the same effect. They don't just, they block the effects of testosterone generally, including in the brain. So you get the behavior changes as well, usually for the worse, I've got to say, right? But you can get a 6-month implant or a 12-month implant. And therefore they last 6 months or they last 12 months. And if your dog's behavior deteriorates considerably, in a way that really compromises their welfare, there is even a case for potentially removing the implant from underneath the skin, okay? But that's probably a story for another day. So what I'm saying, guys, is that castration is a blanket approach of castrating every dog is definitely not the answer. Testosterone absolutely does have behaviorally beneficial effects, yeah, on that amygdala that causes most behavior struggles. And if you are thinking of doing it, always go a reversible option first. That's just common sense, right? That just makes sense to me, that if we can test drive something that might make our dog's behavior a lot worse, let's do the test drive rather than buy the car, right? So guys, I hope you understand that a little bit more. And you know, if you're interested in the science of it, there's a couple of papers that will lead you down a bit of a rabbit warren of evidence. There's Tong et al. 2019, which it's a study in mice, and what they did is they gave the mice testosterone. So they gave from outside in, gave them some testosterone, and the mice were much more confident in the tests that they were doing. So they were much more likely to go into a novel environment, whereas in the absence of the testosterone, they'd be more worried about the novel environment. As an example of, you know, some of the research that's been done on testosterone. There is some dog-specific research, McGreevy et al., which I'll just need to remind myself of the year, 2018. And what the research team looked at was a large sample of dogs, about over 6,000 dogs. Dogs basically, and looked at the amount of time those dogs had been exposed to the effects of testosterone. So how long did they keep their gonads, right? And then said, okay, well, let's look at the behavior struggles that these dogs experienced. And what they found is that the longer that the dogs kept their gonads, the longer that their dogs were exposed to the testosterone, the less likely they were to have 26 different behavior struggles, right? I think 7 of which were ones that you would call kind of aggressive behavior struggles in the context of the research. So reactivity to people or reactivity to dogs, right? Which again kind of fits with this picture that we're describing here of, you know what? The benefits on confidence far outweigh the disadvantages of that 5% increase on the volume dial of the brain. Does that make sense, guys? Now, hey guys, I just want to take a little pause to let you know how you can get involved with the official Help My Dog membership hub. If you're enjoying geeking out about the science of dog behaviour, want to watch dogs practically being trained in real life, and you want to progress even further, you can join our members-only community and get targeted learning with me each and every week to help you combat your dog struggles at home, on walks, and out and about. And right now, when you jump in, you can actually watch Gorse's behaviour rehabilitation from trauma to triumph in an over-the-shoulder video diary showing real-life situations. To find out more, just head over to www.helpmydog.com/hub. Now, if you're listening to this and you're like, okay, Tom's like bombarded me with a load of information, so I'll need to listen to this again. Totally fine. Cool thing about a podcast, you get to listen to it as many times as you want. But you're also there thinking, well, my dog's gonads are definitely gone. And I know that you can't stick them back on anyway, but this was like years ago that they went. What do I do? Okay. Now, the cool thing is that regardless of whether your dog has testosterone or not, that does not impact our ability to reshape their brain, give them the skills that they need for life, and transform their behavior struggles, okay? So don't worry about it. The second thing, it's like a nice to have, not an essential, right? If they're on there and you're deciding, keep them on there potentially. But the second thing, guys, is that actually there are other areas of the body where testosterone is produced. For example, it's produced to a small extent in your dog's adrenal glands. Now, what would be a way that we could try and boost testosterone? Well, there's no research in dogs, and in fact in animals generally, but in humans, there is a lot of research, exercise physiology research, that shows that short bursts of exercise lead to a spike in testosterone. And if you keep the exercise short, then cortisol, that stress hormone, doesn't yet start to increase and drop the testosterone back down. Now, what do we do at Help My Dog? We play short bursts of games and strategies and have fun times with our dogs. What is that going to be doing? Yeah, it's going to be stimulating that testosterone surge. I say surge, it's probably not, you know, catastrophic, but there's going to be an increase. And as long as we keep sessions short and frequent, then we don't have that stress hormone of cortisol building, filling their bucket and dropping that testosterone back down. So I guess get excited about what you can control, because it'd be easy to focus on what we can't control or what we wish we had done differently in this context. And that's definitely not going to improve your dog's behavior. And as I say, we see this every single day in the behavior clinic, in the Help My Dog family, whereby, you know, regardless of whether dogs are neutered or not, we achieve these amazing behavior transformations that I want for each and every one of you. And I hope you got some value from this episode of the podcast. Now, we're not going to do cringe stories today. Okay, we are. Let's do them. Madeline looked at me shocked. I obviously was convincing. Let's do a couple of cringe stories, because I definitely got very passionate about testosterone there and this podcast went on for a long time. So let's do two. Right, so our two cringe stories. Thank you very much, Madeline. I'm looking forward to being tortured with these. Tom and Madeline, I've got a strange one for you. I think they're all quite strange, so I am concerned. My late boy, a border collie boxer mix named Spear, was just a pup, and we decided to enroll him in puppy kindergarten. Is that a US thing? To socialize him with other puppies. That is all we knew about training at the time. I love it. Now we know better. That's cool. He was a nervous little guy, and it took a bit for him to warm up and play with the other puppies. One day, during class, I was talking with the trainer, and Spear was standing next to me, as he usually did. As we were talking, we heard a sound similar to small rocks being dropped on the ground. We looked down, and Spear was squatting to take a poo, and out came real pebbles. The trainer looked at me and said, "Now that's new. I've never seen that before." I was so embarrassed and felt like a horrible owner that let her dog eat rocks. Spear was in the habit of eating small rocks. As a new pet owner, I was worried and asked his vet about it, and he didn't understand it either. He just told me to watch and make sure he passes them. Okay, which he did once while we were walking and left a line of rocks behind us. Oh my word! I was very vigilant in watching him closely and making sure he didn't eat rocks anymore, which he did eventually outgrow. I'm so glad that we have found a better way to train and build relationships with our dogs. Everything I do with my current dogs is in memory of Spear. Thank you for HMD and an amazing community. It's just the fresh start we needed. That's so cool. So it's interesting. We see quite a few behaviour cases where dogs eat inappropriate items like rocks, and it gets to the point, the original kind of motivation for it might be something as simple as, owner grabs out of mouth and it's all a bit kind of crazy and a bit chaotic and maybe a little bit fun. And then the dogs start to do it almost as like an action prompting, attention seeking type behavior. But then it becomes almost like this abnormal repetitive behavior where in the presence of rocks, they have to eat rocks. And it can happen with socks as well and, different kinds of things. It's great that you're able to work with Spear to change that. I'm impressed. That is good. It's an interesting one.
It is.
Right, second one. Oh, this is a short one.
This is my favorite.
This is what, your favorite ever?
Maybe not ever, but it's certainly like, okay. Definitely.
My son and daughter-in-law were potty training my two-year-old grandson. So the potty was in their family room during the day. I dread to think. No. One day, he had successfully done a poop and turned around excitedly to tell his mum. She walked over to check, but there was nothing there. No. Then she realised why. Their dog, Karma, was beside the potty, happily licking his lips after having enjoyed a surprise treat. Why is that your favourite? That
it's
is
just so
that
bad.
Is the sign of just a sick mind.
It's just so innocent. Oh, it's funny.
Oh, for some reason I'm imagining a Pez dispenser. You know those things.
Oh, disgusting.
All right, guys. I hope you learned something from those cringe stories. I'm not entirely sure I did. But if anything, it brightened your day. And hopefully you've learned some stuff about testosterone as well. That was this episode of the Help My Dog podcast. We'll see you next time. And I think we're going to talk female hormones.